Good afternoon, evening, or morning. Welcome to Three of Hearts, a Space Kings podcast. My name is Jordan, and I am the host, which is what they call the GM of Space Kings, but it's also what I am on this podcast, a host. But there's also other people on this podcast, such as Essay.
It's true. My name is Essay. I will be a player in our Space Kings game, and I guess also a podcast co-host. I guess technically we're a three-host podcast.
We're a three-host podcast. It's in the name. Three. Three people, all of us have hearts.
Oh. And my co-player is Ela.
Hi. My name is Ela. I am, like Essay said, a player as well, a co-host. I think we should also say what our pronouns are and what our characters' pronouns are.
Oh, that's smart. My pronouns are they and them, and my characters' pronouns vary because I play almost all the characters.
Ew. Yes, this is Essay again. My pronouns are she, her, and the character I play, Felspar, his pronouns are he, him.
And this is Ela. My pronouns are they or he, and my character, Vellum, his pronouns are he, him as well.
Alrighty. Just briefly, Space Kings is an indie RPG created by Kevin Cole and Super Tri Studios. It's like other TTRPGs, except instead of dice, you use playing cards to determine how successful you are at things. It's pretty simple. I think you'll get it just by listening to the podcast. We do have an episode zero that's going to be on our Patreon, where I talk about the rules a little more thoroughly because I'm helping Ela and Essay make characters. So if you really want the deets, you can go to that. We'll plug that later. Oh, and if you want to find out more about Space Kings, you can go to spacekings.space. For more information. It's a very easy URL to remember.
Wonderful URL.
It's three words and two of them are space.
You know how we feel about things that are three words.
Positively. Do we want to talk about the world now, or is it okay if I just start the podcast?
I think maybe just a super brief intro of, like, this is a fantasy-inflected world, but is taking some inspiration from the 1950s of our world. Much like the 1950s, is set in a post-war sort of society with the corresponding technological leap forward. And magic was a thing, and then there was a war, and then magic is much less of a thing now. But in the trade-off, we get automobiles and guns. Also, the other thing to say is that all three of us on this pod are queer and have varying other marginalizations as we go. And so this is a queer normative world. There is no homophobia. We will I'd probably not be tackling race in, like, a deep and troubling way. No transphobia. This is a queer for queer podcast.
That is 100% correct. We open our story in the twin moon world of Bicycle. Specifically, we are in Sylphala. It is a forest that spans hundreds and hundreds of square miles. One of the biggest regions in the world. And more specifically, we start in a thinly treed area that has recently been named Union Glade. And even more specifically, we are in Vasa Natura, which is the capital of Sylphala. Not only that, it's probably the biggest city in the world at this point. It used to be the capital of a smaller elven nation and recently has become more inclusive, and there are many cultures found within Vasa Natura. The city is solar punk in nature. A lot of things are shiny. Lots of nature. Things are powered by wind and water and air and the sun. However, although the city is beautiful, there is some conflict within. Ever since a war that ended about 20 years ago, where the evil sorcerer Morpholomew was defeated by a group of adventurers, the government has been changing pretty consistently in Vasa Natura. So, like, it was like a straight old Roman style democracy, and then it was like kind of an oligarchy, and it just keeps changing. Currently, it's got an elected governor, Governor Thorne. She is in charge. She was an elected official, but she rules kind of like a queen. Very what I say goes. So yeah, that is the situation in Vasa Natura. Even to get a little bit more specific about where we start in the headquarters of an organization known as Securing Unpredictable Injurious Thaumaturgic Situations, or SUITS. It is in this 15 story building that we find ourselves. One last specification, it is in the office of Jack Spade, the head, the owner, the head honcho, the chief of Suits. Our players, Agent Spar and Agent Vellum, find themselves called to a meeting in Jack's office. Who gets there first?
I think Vellum gets there first.
Okay.
Whether or not it was a appointed time, Vellum probably has arrived sooner than necessary.
Okay. Yes, when you get in the office in the morning, and we'll say maybe Vellum comes in a little early. Oh, you actually find a package on your desk that says to bring it to Jack's office and open it there. ASAP.
Well, that's mysterious.
Actually, it says pronto, to be
oh,
exact.
Pronto?
Mm-hmm.
But not stat.
But not stat. Just pronto.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Pronto, but not supposed to open it. That's a little concerning, but is it sealed?
Yeah. It's also, I should say, it's about the size of a book.
Oh, okay. So even if I did open it, I wouldn't be able to read the whole thing.
It's not a book. It's just the size of a book.
You said the size of a book.
I did, so... and I meant it, but it's not a book.
Is it like a envelope of...
It's kind of like an envelope with like bubble wrap on the inside, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so you're in the office now. Do you open the package? Do you wait for... I should say, you get into the office and it's empty. There's no one in the office. It was unlocked, but the desk, which says Jack Spade on a little placard, is totally empty. There's a lovely view of Fossa Natura, one of the canals that runs through the city. The morning sun is glistening on the water, but the office is definitely empty. The light isn't even on.
Okay. What did the note say specifically?
Said Vellum.
Just to open it in his office?
Come to my office. Pronto. Open this package when you get here.
Okay. He'll turn on the lights and open the package.
It is a cassette. And also a little box that says, Happy 18th Anniversary, Agent Vellum.
Oh.
The box actually has wrapping paper on it, and it's a bunch of different dog faces.
Oh, that's cute. Wow, I didn't think he'd remember.
Do you open your gift? You don't have to right now.
Yeah, I think Vellum is, you know, a little bit surprised by it, and also, you know, maybe the idea of the best part of when someone opens a gift is when you're the person that's giving it, and you see their reaction.
Aww, okay.
So I think he's going to wait and hopefully see Jack soon and open it then.
Okay. Essay, what time does... Basically, Spar gets to his desk first thing in the morning and finds a similar but larger package. If I had to describe the size of this package, it's like stereo-sized.
Okay.
So it has a similar note, Agent Spar, meeting in my office. This one does say stat.
Okay. Does it say open the package in my office, or does it?
It does. It does.
Spar's gonna open it at his desk.
Yep.
It is a cassette player.
He's gonna like rifle through all the packaging to see if there's a cassette.
There's not.
Huh. All right. Then he will take the stereo, rifle through the packaging one more time to make sure there isn't anything important in it, and pocket the note and sort of stroll up to Jack's office, slightly hungover. And just like not late, but like not early either. If this is a 9-to-5 office, it, you know, he rolls in at like 9:05, stretches, gets some coffee, strolls around for a second, maybe, you know, it's like probably 9:20 by the time he starts wandering upstairs. God.
So Vellum, you wait. How long are you willing to wait in the office? Because it sounds like you're waiting 20 minutes.
Well, I mean,
I assumed Vellum was the sort of person to get there at like 7:30.
You're not wrong.
Oh, fuck. So is Vellum waiting several hours for Spar to
I don't know if it's that early, but if it's a 9-to-5, I could see him arriving at the office like by 8:30.
Wow. Okay. Well, I will say...
And it's... I think another thing about it is, you know, he has this note to have this meeting. He probably thinks that this is like a meeting that's supposed to happen before work.
Okay, so if you're there at like 8:30, maybe at like 8:50, the door opens and a portly young man opens the door. You know this guy. He's bespectacled, wears a nice like plaid button up. His name is Greggins. He's an elf.
Love that name.
And thank you. I love it too. Greggins is an elf and he's Jack's personal assistant. And he comes in. He's like, oh, Agent Vellum. Where is Agent Felspar?
I am unaware.
I assumed you would show it up together. Does it not mention that? I didn't read the note. I didn't write the note. Jack wrote the note.
No, it doesn't mention any other agents on this note.
He like kind of looks at the note. It's like, you'd think he would have set a time. Anyway. So Greggins goes and takes a seat on the opposite side of Jack's table, a thing only Greggins and Jack are allowed to do. And this, I guess, kind of small talks with Vellum until Spar arrives at 9:20.
I do imagine that Vellum asks about Jack, like if he's running late or if taking a sick day or...
Oh, yeah, Jack's away on business. Like, suits business. There's in a village a few miles north, there is a thaumaturgic incident that needed investigation, and Jack is taking care of it personally.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Congratulations on the 18 years, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I believe you're one of two employees at this company who can claim that, so...
Is Jack the other one out of character?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. So Spar's gonna eventually, you know, make his way up. He's got the stereo under one arm and a coffee cup in the other, and like the notes tucked in his breast pocket. And he's gonna stop in the doorway and sort of take stock of the situation. Ela, do you want to describe what Vel looks like?
Yeah. So Vellum is very put together, probably a bit more of a slim frame. He's got hair that is short and well kept, but it's pushed out of his eyes. He's got glasses. His hair is graying at his temples a bit. He has a cane, which he uses because he has a bit of a limp. And he has some rather large scars on his face. I think specifically across his right eye. He probably is the type of person to wear like a three-piece suit every day. That may be more common in this setting, I'm not sure, but...
Because we are in a fantasy setting, we should also note that Vellum is a human.
Yes, Vellum is a human, and I've been imagining them with a bit of Asian heritage that may not really come up much in terms of this is a fantasy world, so we're not going to have the same kind of cultures and everything, but...
Yeah.
Just for representation.
For sure.
He's not a cis, straight, white man.
No, there will be none of those on this podcast. And then Essay, what does Vellum see?
So he sees someone he may or may not recognize, depending. Agent Felspar is sort of medium height. He is, you know, faux 1950, so he's wearing a sharp gray suit and has a sword strapped to his back, which goes well with the suit, I think. He has the build of a fighter. Like, he's visibly strong. Ela, did you want to say something?
Yes, I was wondering, is the sword strapped to his back under his jacket? Is it concealed?
Oh, no. It's like the hilt is visible over his shoulder.
Okay, I wasn't sure how big this sword was. Cool.
No, it's like a full like hand and a half, or at least.
Cool.
It's not subtle. It's his sword. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, even in a fantasy world, it's not the most unusual thing you'll see all day, but it's also not usual.
Vellum doesn't have one, for sure.
Spar could probably get him one if he wanted one.
He'd have to teach Vellum how to use it.
I don't think that'd be a problem. Yes, okay, so, yes, Felspar, he has black hair that's mostly slicked back, except for one like stubborn little curl across his forehead. He has brown skin and he's holding a cup of coffee. He's got the stereo tucked under his arm and he has bags under his eyes and is like, he smells very freshly showered in the way that hungover people sometimes do, where it's like aggressively soapy, but you can kind of still smell a little bit of the alcohol.
Oh, and Spar is half of an elf and half of a human. Is that correct?
Yes. Perhaps not strictly half and half necessarily, but yes, Spar.
But there is some elf and some human in
Yeah, his ears are a little bit on the pointy side. You know, you might look at him and think that his elf eyes could see things.
I did forget.
What?
I was just going to say Vellum is taller than Spar.
Yes.
And Vel is also a trans man.
So yeah, this is the first time you two have been in the same room, at least in the same room, very alone. And not like that essay. And, but you guys have definitely seen each other before if you've taken a look at the Employee of the Month wall, because you've both made it several times. So, you guys are in the office now. Greggins is like, Spar, you made it.
Yeah, he's gonna sort of like raise his coffee cup in a like good morning gesture generally at the room and like sit down in the nearest open chair. Be like, yes, good morning. There was a note.
Yes, yeah. It must have not said pronto like Vellums did.
Must not have.
This is canonically true because it said stat.
It did say stat, which as we know is more serious than pronto. All right. So, Greggins is like, well, no, you guys can solve the puzzle I've confronted you with. What happens when you get what do you guys do?
Would Vellum notice like the radio as far as like getting settled?
Oh, for sure.
I also just want to quickly ask, is it comfortable to sit in a chair with a sword strapped to your back?
I mean, this isn't his first rodeo. He's got a whole system down.
I mean, I'm just thinking like in my mind palace here. You know, if he takes the time to take it off and could show his muscles, that could be a thing that happens.
No, I think it's sort of a deal where like he sort of unconsciously like nudges the tip of it with an elbow, you know, get it in the right spot, and then the strap across is loose enough that it can ride up a little bit when he sits down. Like, this thing is his baby. Like he treats it like a limb. It's there. It's his. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is an extension of him. Okay. I would say that when Spar comes in, Vellum definitely eyes him over, trying to, I guess, like, it's sort of the stereotypical, maybe, first move that you would see in, like, a noir thing of trying to judge a person based on how they are moving, how they are talking, you know, what their mannerisms are. A bit clinical, trying to ascertain what he can about Spar before Spar even really says anything to Vellum.
Okay. Well, in that case, you're gonna have to flip some cards.
Oh no.
We're gonna play a fucking RPG, guys. Go ahead and flip either intelligence and or wit and empathy to kind of get a read on this guy.
Okay, intelligence and empathy. So how many cards do I flip?
I don't know. What are your stats?
I have 4 intelligence.
And no empathy?
And no empathy.
Harsh.
So you're going to flip 5 cards because you're healthy. So you always get a bonus card if you're healthy.
Okay.
So, yeah, go ahead and flip 5 cards. And every face card is a success.
Does it matter what order I flip them in?
No?
Okay, just making sure. All right, we got a 9, a 10, a 2, another 2, and a 6.
Okay. Oof. So, yeah, Spar is a handsome enigma.
Mm-hmm. That he is. Vellum maybe gets a little bit distracted just, you know, looking at his pretty face and his sharp cheekbones and all of that.
I'm going to say Spar notices that and, like, smiles a little.
Good, good.
Eventually, he's gonna notice that the Vel probably has a cassette in his lap and be like...
Or at least a package.
Are you saying that Spar notices Velm's package?
Oh, my Absolutely. God.
And the size of it.
Uh-huh.
Imagines the heft of it.
God.
So... Spar will sort of like gesture again with the coffee cup at Vel's lap and be like, I think you might have you might have the other half here.
Velum will open the package and pull out the cassette and hold it out to Spar. This what you need?
I hope so. If it's not, then I mean, it is sort of our jobs to investigate. May as well start here. Maybe it's a clue.
I think Velum cracks a smile at that. It would certainly be interesting if Jack gave us a little goose chase. Hopefully things are not that confusing. We do have important work that we're doing, I'm sure you as well.
Of course. All of my work. Very important.
Let's see what's on this.
Yeah, where is Jack, by the way? I sort of expected he'd be here.
Gregan says, yeah, he's away on suits business. Something came up that we had of us. Slightly personal nature for Jack, and so he is investigating.
While Gregans is saying this, Spar's gonna set up the stereo in whatever way that is that requires, and pop the cassette in.
It is it is cord based, so you have to plug it into the wall. However, it doesn't quite reach the outlet, and upon realizing this, Gregans goes, wait, he gave me a package too. And
Oh my god.
And Gregans opens.
At this point, like, Spar's already kneeling on the floor and is just like, it just has set the stereo down and plugged it in.
Gregans opens his package, revealing an extension cord.
Gregans opens his package and sees a loving note from Jack saying, hey Gregans, you're my favorite assistant. Stay cool.
There's an extension cord and also like a kind of a like a binder. Okay, you hit play on the cassette and it begins to play. It says, Agent Spar, Cowlin, Gregans, thank you for joining me in my office, in which I am not presently in. I've assembled you here.
Suspicious glint.
Spar's like nodding along as if Jack is there, like, it's true, you're not in it.
Is he secretly here?
Would Velum want to flip investigation on that?
Ela wants to. I don't know that Velum would think to. You know, maybe this is just the way that Jack speaks.
It's not normally, I'll say that.
Is this not how he usually
speaks? No, but he's also pretty eccentric, so like this isn't super weird.
Okay. Well, we'll see if there's anything else weird in this note, in this message.
Thank you all for assembling. As you may have noticed, this is a recorded message. I'm not present. However, if you have questions, Gregan should be frantically reading a case file currently. He is. And if you have questions, you can pause this recording and ask him at any time. Now, I have an assignment for the two of you. Now, normally these appear in the form of paperwork at your desk, but this one's a little peculiar, and I thought I would explain it to you in person via recording. There has been a spike of thaumaturgic activity in an unusual location, and a lot of it. Enough that we're concerned.
Spar has a little, like, handheld notebook, got a little palm-sized flippy guy, and has started taking notes.
Specifically, this spike has come from the village of Clovenheart. Now, as one of you well knows, no one can enter Clovenheart unless they are invited or they've been there before. They have not officially reported this thaumaturgic activity, and they're not especially fond of the feds, so we have not been invited. That is where Agent Spar comes in. Spar, you are, of course, from Clovenheart. You can enter. That is useful. The exact parameters of this mission are a bit of a mystery, which is the unusual element to all of this. We don't usually do things that aren't reported to us directly. Usually we have some idea what we're getting into. That is not the case here. The other unusual factor is why I have called Cowlin, Agent Vellum, into my office.
When the recording specifies Agent Vellum, Barr visibly stiffens.
I think Vellum notices this.
Clovenheart is protected by long-standing wards that forbid people from finding it, right? Those wards also have an effect on radio communication, which is a problem for our operation, which relies heavily upon radio communication. So, instead of referring to a desk agent from the field like you normally would, Spar, Vellum will be going into the field with you.
Vellum's gonna pale a little bit at that.
Spar's gonna hit pause on the cassette and ask Greggins, are we sure that Agent Vellum is the right man for this?
Vellum visibly bristles a bit.
Why wouldn't he be? He's one of our top agents.
He is, but one of does imply that there are other top agents as well who might be more comfortable in the field.
Vellum, do you have an objection to following Jack's orders?
I will follow Jack's orders. It is a bit odd. I am not usually out on the field. This is true. It does sound like an intriguing case. I'm sure I could be helpful. I do understand Agent Felspar's hesitation, though. I may not be the best in a fight if it were to come to that.
Right. So obviously it should be Spar's top priority to protect you should such a thing arise. Spar is there to do the fights. Vellum, you will be there to lend your arcana expertise, your general intelligence and knowledge. Is this agreeable to everyone?
Vellum's gonna look to Spar and kind of, you know, almost a little bit of a challenging look in his face. You know, there's this little bit of tension here between them that's starting to build. Whether that's because Vellum assumes that Spar doesn't think Vellum is capable, or what exactly is going on in our brains here.
Spar will continue listening to the recording and see if there's anything in it that means that Vell specifically has to go, or if someone who maybe has someone who's maybe more comfortable in the field could go instead.
Okay, so you hit play. The recording continues. Obviously, protecting Agent Vellum will be a top priority for you, Agent Felspar. You will lend your physical expertise to his mental acumen, and you will make a most splendid team. Not to demean anyone else's intelligence or physical acumen, merely stating facts about your expertise. Now,
Spar is not going to pause the tape again, but he is going to think, is he trying to set us up? It sounds like he's trying to set us up.
Jack has been trying to set up this meet cute for 5 years and finally has an excuse. I love it.
I'd prefer if you left tomorrow first thing. Actually, you have to leave tomorrow first thing because I've ordered you train tickets, which are in Greggan's binder, that will take you to a place near enough to Clovenheart's known location for Spar to leave the rest of the way. A few other matters to take care of. As you will not be able to quickly communicate with the base, we're going to have to take some precautions we don't normally take for this mission. Obviously, written communication is possible and necessary. However, if a week passes and you have not figured out what's going on, you're still out there, return. I want to know you're okay with certainty. Anyone could fake a letter. I'd like to see you in person. Secondly, the question of lethality hopefully will not come up, but if it does, Felspar, I am pre-authorizing you for firearms usage in this case, specifically 6 bullets. Reports still must be filed if any of the bullets are fired, but I will not penalize you for doing so without permission, because you'll have permission. Lastly, not lastly. Nextly, Vellum will be taking with him extra ammunition and other munitions, which can be requested as necessary. And Vellum, I am trusting you to use your best judgment on what is necessary and will allow Spar to use what he needs and only what he needs. If,
okay,
you know, the last thing we need is the people of Clovenheart complaining that we used excessive force. We want to be able to back up our decisions. So I really hope neither of you make me regret this decision, but I chose you because I don't think that you will. That is unfortunately all the information I have in terms of logistics of the mystery of the case. One other matter, I have found lodging for you in Clovenheart. One of my friends, Jasper, former adventurer, part of my crew, they have offered to allow you to stay in their spare room. So they will be your first point of contact when you enter Clovenheart.
Vel will look at Gregans and, you know, he's not trying to take the binder away from him, but he is curious what else is in the binder, if it has details about the mission that Jack hasn't said on this recorded message.
Okay, so you want to investigate this binder. How do you want to do that? You said you don't want to take it from him, but do you want to try to read? Are you trying to, like, read Gregans? Are you trying to take a look at the binder? Like, what's your approach to that?
I think he is both trying to, you know, look at Gregans' expression and also look at the binder. Probably more the binder, because, as we've established, Vellum doesn't have any points in empathy, so they may not be the best at reading people. I also do believe that Vellum can read upside down, because of course he can.
Yeah, I totally buy that. So, are you trying to be stealthy about this, or are you being blunt about it?
Probably a little bit blunt. I don't know that Vellum is especially stealthy.
Okay, so go ahead and flip wit investigation to get a peek.
I think that Vellum doesn't necessarily fully acknowledge or understand emotions and how they all work and conflict with each other sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, wit and investigation, you said?
Correct.
Can it be intelligence?
I don't think so, because I think intelligence, okay, relies on pre-existing knowledge, and this is more like thinking on your feet.
Okay. So I have one wit, and I have two investigation.
So four flips total.
So that means four cards.
Mm-hmm.
We have a five, a three, a jack, okay, and a king.
Nice! Two Damn. Successes! Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
I was getting worried that all my face cards were at the back of the deck.
Okay, so you're able to get a glimpse of some things that Gregans is flipping through. It looks more or less in line with what you were told. One thing that could be of note is there's actually a map of Clovenheart in the binder.
That could be helpful. Well, maybe not so much for Spar, but for Vellum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a map of Clovenheart in the binder. One other thing of note is that there's also one page that has several photographs of what appear to be regular old playing cards.
Hmm, okay. Has Spar or Gregans noticed Vellum doing some investigating here?
I want to say Gregans definitely does, if you're not trying to be sneaky about it. Actually, hold on. I want to flip one card. If it's a success, then Gregans notices. If he doesn't, he doesn't. Nope, he does not notice you.
Okay.
I think Spar definitely starts watching you when you stand up.
That makes sense, totally.
So, yeah, when Gregans is done, he closes the binder and looks up at you and is like, so, any questions? I think that Mr. Spade definitely gave you the gist of it.
Can we have the binder?
Oh, well.
I mean, if it has notes, notes that are pertinent to the mission, it seems like that information should come with us, no?
That's going to be 8. Charm, persuade. Charm, persuade.
Is there a way for Vellum to reinforce this by saying something like, yes, is there any other information in the binder that was not on our recording that would be of use.
I'm going to give you an extra flip for vellum support.
Okay. Can I do presence persuade?
Sure. Yeah. It works for me.
Okay. So that's 2 for presence, 0 for persuade, 1 for being healthy, 1 for vellum. So a total of 4.
Okay.
And we have a 9, an ace, a 6, and a 7.
Okay.
So 1 success with the 8.
Just so you know, there's also drive, which you can use to kind of flip additional cards if you want to. I'm not saying to use it here, but it's just reminding you guys that that exists.
When does drive reset?
Yes, that was my question.
It tells you when a session ends, but I'll sort of tell you when a session ends, because sometimes, you know, depending on how long a recording session is, you know, if we only record 1 hour, that's not going to be a session. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But,
yeah.
But I'll say usually about 3 hours of play will be when it resets. Okay.
Then I'll spend 1 drive.
Okay.
To get an 8. So, no dice. Right.
Okay. So, Gregans is going to say, yes, I can make copies, I suppose.
That'd be very helpful. Thank you, Gregans.
Gregans will, yeah. He'll, I mean, you know, we're not going to play out every minutiae of this, but you guys will be sent out the door with a binder.
Does he give us everything that was in the binder?
Well, okay, that's going to raise another question. Do you go and watch him make copies?
Yeah, under the guise of, like, being helpful, like, oh, well, if you're making copies for me, then I may as well be there to take them so you don't have to
okay,
leave
yeah.
and then come back.
Flip wit investigation to see if you can make sure everything's above board.
All right, happy to. So wit is 4, investigation is 4, so that's 8, and I am healthy is 9.
Yes.
Damn.
Pretty much the most flips you can get on something.
All right, I've got a 4, a joker.
Oh.
Oh.
A jack, a queen, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4. A 6, a jack.
Wow.
A 2, an 8. So it's
3 successes and a joker?
3 successes and a joker.
Okay, wow. Now we're cooking with Space Kings. All right.
remind me what the jokers do.
Yeah, so yes, I was about to. The jokers, they're akin to a 1 in D&D, but they're not a 1. They are a fun twist on the situation, which if you only get a joker, is probably going to be a bad twist. But when you get 3 successes in a joker, then Jordan has to think really hard about what that means. But it's not going to, you know, you're not going to fail. It doesn't take away a success, you know. And you guys also, once per session, get to anti-joker, which is to say, no, that joker doesn't happen. But you don't get to wait for me to tell you what happens before you declare anti-joker, just so you know.
Here's a suggestion. Does this joker mean that Spark can see something in the file that they're not getting and it has a familiar name?
You know, that's good. So, yeah, that's good. There is a page that you're not getting. It's actually a list of names of people who are from the town, many of which you recognize, some of which you do not. And 2 of the names are circled. And one of them is Brunhilde Felspar, who is one of your aunts.
Hmm.
Besides that page, you do get a full printout.
Can Spar see what the other name is and just doesn't recognize it?
Yeah, hold on. Let me refer to my notes really quick.
Willem's going to try to start memorizing the map. He doesn't want to get lost in this town.
Good luck with that.
He doesn't want to. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
The other name is Maxwell. You can't make out the last name.
Jack really needs to get better handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it might be hard.
I was going to say, given what you know. Okay. So, yeah. Has anything else happened at Suit's headquarters?
I think maybe sometime either on the way to make the copies or, like, shortly after that, there's probably a moment where Vellum and Spar lock eyes and Vellum is curious whether Felspar will want to, you know, insist that there be a different agent or if there's anything that they want to try to hash out before this mission.
No, I think Spar's not going to come out as confrontational. So I think maybe this happens after the copies are made, when they're going back to their desks, ostensibly, or wherever they're going. Mm-hmm. When they should be going back to their desks. Who knows if Spar's ever going to get there. But he'll sort of look at Vellum and say, "So, Agent Vellum, in the flesh, it's good to officially meet you." And he'll stick out his hand for a firm handshake.
Vellum will reach out and shake his hand. Maybe not as firm, but, you know, not limp either. I don't know. Oh, that's a bad way to describe it, but you know what I mean.
A confident but not assertive handshake.
Right. It's not a sort of handshake where the person is obviously trying to flex and, like, show that they're strong physically. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a normal, confident handshake. That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Agent Felspar, I believe we've spoken a few times on various missions, but I don't think I've had the pleasure of meeting you in person.
Just the one mission, I think. Memorable, though, it was. he's like, weirdly still shaking.
yes, it certainly was, wasn't it? I don't think that Vellum appears angry. If anything, maybe he sounds a bit fond, reminiscing over this chaotic mission that they had previously.
I think the fondness is upsetting to Spar. That's, he takes that as like a challenge of like, oh, I see. This was a fuck up. This was a fuck up that was probably your fault. And you're like happy about this? Don't care for this.
Oh no.
So he's noting that. He's noting all of that. And is like, well, and he's thinking of something that he can say that is both polite and true. I hope that this goes as well as Jack thinks it will.
I certainly hope so as well. I'm sure I'll be learning a bit on my feet, as it were, but I would appreciate any insight you can offer about Clovenheart.
I bet you would.
Yeah, Vellum doesn't like that reply.
He wasn't supposed to.
It feels a little bit insubordinate, even though Vellum is not necessarily his boss. Vellum's going to breathe and not snap at Spar, and just, I guess, say, I suppose I will see you tomorrow morning then.
Yes, have a good night, Agent Vellum.
It is 10 in the morning.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Mitro. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Thank you for listening to our first episode. This is the segment in the middle where we're going to tell you some things that you can take with you for the rest of your life. Treasure, hold them close. As I said at the beginning of the show, my name is Jordan. I'm your GM. I don't know if I should be saying this in the intro. It's the first episode, so I thought maybe a reintroduction would be good. If it's not, Essay can cut it out, and you'll never hear this. Three of Hearts is a podcast where we play the game Space Kings. It is a tabletop RPG where you flip playing cards instead of rolling dice. To find out more about Space Kings, you can go to spacekings.space. You can find the creator, Kevin Cole, on Twitter, @RealKevinCole. Yeah, thank you, Kevin, for making Space Kings. It's a fun game, and we have a good time on this podcast. You know, you can also listen to the podcast Pretend Friends, which is hosted by Kevin, and it's kind of the official Space Kings podcast. We're sort of the cool, edgy, rebellious Space Kings, unofficial, unlicensed, unrated.
Well, yeah, true. Hey, Jordan, if I wanted to find you on social media, where would I look?
Oh, why would you want that? I'm on Twitter. Is it Jordan _Quiverns or just Jordan Quiverns? I don't remember what the new one is. I'm going to look. Hold on. You can find me on Twitter. Thank you for asking, Essay. You can find me on Twitter @JordanQuiverns. My last name is spelled Quiverns.
Dope. Love it. Thank you.
The music for the podcast is all by Louis Zong, who you can find online at louiszong.com. And you can find their Twitter at Everyday Louie, spelled L-O-U-I-E. The songs that we've used for the intro is Dogtective. For the midtro is At Last a Piano. And the outro is Ghost plus Guest.
Where can we find you online, Ela?
You can find me at Ela Alexei. It's I-L-A-A-L-E-X-E-I.
You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Patreon, other socials at 3HeartsCast. That is 3 spelled out, T-H-R-E-E. You should definitely check out our Patreon, which has cool bonuses like our first episode where we build our characters and talk a little bit more about the mechanics of Space Kings. And we'll throw things up there like outtakes, jokes that were cool and funny, but it had to get cut.
I thought that was too edgy for the main podcast.
For the unrated main podcast, yeah. And we have plans for all kinds of future stuff. So we're planning on putting some art up, some single shot games that we'll play, the three of us. So should be cool and fun. And every tier gets the same reward. So whether you want to give us $1 or $10 or $120 a month, we love all of those options, and they will all buy you the same amount of content, which is all of it, because capitalism fucking sucks. And so if all you can give us is a little bit, we love that, and we're so, so grateful. And if you can't give anything at all, we still love you, and we love that, and we're still so, so grateful. You can find me online. See, nobody has to ask, because I'm always online. I am the internet. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter at EssayHex. That is E-S-S-A-Y-H-E-X.
Is there an underscore in yours? I can't remember.
There is not. I hate underscores.
Wow. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. On to the rest of the episode. I hope you enjoy as much as you enjoyed the first half. Or more, if you didn't like the first half. What are you doing after work today? What does the rest of your day look like?
There's definitely going to be a portion of packing, unpacking, and repacking what to bring with, because he doesn't travel much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, he is very meticulous. I imagine there's a bit of, well, what if I need this? Do I really? No, I don't need to bring all 5 volumes of this encyclopedia with me. I've got 2 of them memorized. You know, lots of what's practical to bring with, and trying to suss that out despite not having much experience as a field agent.
Okay. Flip intelligence survival to see how good you do at this.
That will be 5 total.
Okay.
We have a 9, a jack, a 7, another jack, and a 4.
So 2 successes is adequate. So, like, you're not ready for anything, but you have clothes ready for different kinds of weather. You know, if you're only there for the 7 days that you're supposed to be, you are packed 1 clothes for every day. You don't even have to wash them. So you're good.
No. He's going to bring at least 1 extra set of clothes, because you never know what's going to happen.
Okay.
Could fall into mud. You know, you could, something could get spilled at dinner. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. You want to make sure you have at least 1 extra set of clothing.
So I'll let you make that call, even though you did get a 2. But the last thing you pack, because you haven't done laundry in a couple days, has to be objectively the worst thing that you own.
Okay, that is the extra set of clothing in case of emergency only. Mm-hmm. But at least it's clean.
And you don't have to reveal what that is right now, but I want you to think about it.
I'm gonna argue strongly for some Bermuda shorts.
Some laundry day attire
for sure.
maybe some clothes that were like given as a prank gift that like,
oh my god,
it's too practical to throw them out. But
right, they're perfectly good clothing,
just not for Vel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. While you're packing, oh, by the way, at any point do you open the gift that Jack gave you, or are you waiting to be in person with Jack?
He wanted to wait to be in person with Jack, but you know, if Jack is on this mission, mm-hmm. and Vel's about to go on this mission, he might not get the chance to do so. Mm-hmm. And it's also possible that Jack was forward thinking enough to gift something that could be useful for this mm-hmm. mission. Mm-hmm. So I think Vellum is going to open it. And he will definitely thank Jack when he sees him.
Okay. So you open the package, the little box, and it says, well, it doesn't really say anything, actually. Well, there's a card. It just says, happy anniversary, congratulations on another year. It's kind of one of those funny ones that's like old man themed, like calling you a geezer.
Another year of life on this planet somehow. You're not dead mm-hmm. yet. What are those? Right? That's how they're worded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Inside it says, like, let's grab a drink when you're back from Clovenheart. And it's signed with his signature handprint. Oh, so the actual gift itself. It's a very nice ring. It's got a golden band and a jewel on the top. It's like a tasteful jewel, not super big. But it looks nice, and...
Is Jack trying to marry Vellum?
It's hard to say. Okay. So it's actually, you wouldn't know from looking at it, but it's actually a mood ring.
Oh my god. I'm picturing, like, the 90s era.
No, mood that's rings the thing. It doesn't.
That we would know.
That's what I'm saying. It's not an obvious mood ring. It's right. Classy, but it is a mood ring. It comes with a little instruction booklet. And just to not give away the game, like, the colors do not correspond to, like, obvious emotions. So, like, it doesn't turn blue when you're sad or green when you're jealous of someone. Like, there's a pamphlet with, like, instructions on what color means what.
Like with all mood rings.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Blue is happy, Jordan.
Yes.
Blue is always happy.
This mood ring, because it allows you to be more in touch with your own emotions, gives you +1 to empathy.
Awesome.
Yes.
Is that a thing I would mark down for like skills, or is that like I should put it under useful items?
Probably both.
As a bonus both. Occasionally.
Okay. Yeah, both. No, yeah, it definitely goes under skills. Like you always have that +1 as long as you have the mood ring. Okay. So while you are packing, or maybe as you're wrapping up, you get your phone begins to ring.
Oh, Vellum will answer the phone.
And I will say, in this world, though telephones exist, they pretty much only, they're pretty short range, so, like, you can pretty much only call someone within the same city as you. Radio communication is for longer range stuff. Anyway, you pick up, and you hear the voice of your uncle, Gray Harrington. And...
Not Red Harrington.
Not Red Harrington. Gray Harrington. Gray says, my boy, Vellum. I've got something to talk to you about. It's pretty important, and I don't want to do it over the phone. So if you can come to my estate quickly, before tomorrow, ideally tonight, soon, I've got dinner set for two. I'll be waiting. And he hangs up before you even say a word.
Well, Uncle, okay. I guess Vellum puts his suit jacket back on and starts to head that way.
Okay.
If it's really so important.
All right. So the Harrington estate, where you spent much of your childhood, is a big-ass building. It's got a moat. It's that fancy. And it has, like, this glass drawbridge. A lot of the materials used to make the estate are either translucent or outright see-through. Not the into the building itself, but just, like, there's, like, glass statues out front and stuff. The bridge was up, but as you approach it, it lowers for you. And there's several large, actually glass radio towers around the estate. A doorman, who you would recognize, he's been in the family for a long time, His name is Bellevue. And he opens the door for you.
Thank you, Bellevue.
He nods. He is a halfling. You go into the estate and you are led through many large rooms, tall ceilings, many paintings of the Harrington family's achievements. Specifically, Gray is the creator of not the concept of radio, but like the standardized radio that pretty much everyone in the world uses. Gray radio or Gradio was created by him. So, yeah, there are paintings of places that Gray has been and people that they've met, photos of them together. They're very proud of their achievements. And I should also say, because obviously Vellum would know this, Gray is gender fluid, so goes by she, they, and her, but also prefers uncle as their title.
Do they use masculine pronouns at all, or no?
Yeah. Did I say she and her? Yeah. Sorry, men don't exist in my purview. They, okay. They, he, and her.
Cool.
Yeah. So... Yeah, that was a look into my psyche. Ela, what did you say? I'm sorry.
I was just gonna have Vellum talking to Uncle Gray.
Oh yeah, so yeah, she's waiting for you at the end of a long ass table. It's not like a scene in Tim Burton's Batman where they're sitting on opposite ends though. Like there is a place right next to her, and they are dressed pretty femme tonight. They have like a long flowing dress. But they still have their bushy beard and pretty wild hair.
Excellent. I love my eccentric uncle.
Gray says, Cowlin! Cowlin, come, have a seat.
Yes, of course. Are you okay? Is anything the matter? You sounded so urgent earlier.
Oh, I just wanted to get you over here. It can be so hard to have dinner with my nephew. Sometimes I have to go to extreme lengths.
You don't have to go to extreme lengths. I'm always happy to have dinner with you, Uncle.
I must be thinking of a different nephew. So anyway, he only has one nephew. So, well, okay, so we can assume you guys kind of chit-chat for a while. As happens every single time you're ever in their presence, they're like, so, are you seeing anyone yet?
Uncle... I do appreciate the concern and the support. I don't know, Uncle. They say that there's someone out there for everyone, but it just seems like a lot of effort to try to find the right person or persons.
I do understand that. I myself, you know, haven't had love in a long time.
I love you, Uncle.
Oh, I love you too, but you know what I mean.
I do.
You know, not to get too glum, but, you know, when your parents passed, a part of me passed with them. That's all I'll say. And it for me, it feels like, especially with my age, that part of my life is behind me. But for you, it is still in your future. even if you are not the spring chicken you used to be, you will find that special someone. I believe in it. Even if destiny does not bring you to them, you will take yourself to destiny.
Well, Uncle, it is funny that you mention bringing myself to destiny.
Did you meet a girl named Destiny?
No.
You did find someone.
No, oh. Uncle.
Was it a man named Destiny? Sorry, that was simple. That was very assuming of me.
I have not, at this moment, met anyone named Destiny.
Okay.
I will be out of town for the next several days on a mission. It's uncommon for me to be out in the field, but, you know, it'll be a nice change of pace. You know, maybe I will run into someone.
And you can see a great deal of concern on her face. And she says, well, be careful. You know, I'm not looking to lose another Vellum.
I think I will be perfectly safe. The agent I am paired with has a great deal of physical acumen. I have full confidence that should the need arise, that he would make sure that I do not get hurt too bad.
That seems to bring some comfort to Gray.
How familiar with suits is Gray? Are they familiar?
Gray is quite familiar with suits. You know, Gray was one of the investors in the existence of suits. So pretty darn familiar.
Would Gray ask which agent Vellum?
Oh yeah, that's good. Your Uncle Gray is pouring both of you a glass of wine in these polished silver cups. She looks at you with interest and says, "So, what agent is assisting you in this mission? Who's the field agent? Anyone I know?"
You might know him. It's Agent Felspar.
Yeah, by reputation only. I had never met the gentleman personally.
I am immediately suspicious. Ela is, anyway.
No, he's good at his job, from what I understand. You should be in good hands.
Good. Good to hear it.
Do you know them?
I believe that we worked together on a previous case, but this is my first time meeting him in person. Oh,
I see. Well, I hope that you two get along and maybe find some destiny together.
I'm not sure if Vellum knows how to reply to that. Like, if he thinks that they are implying that there might be some romantic tension there, or if they're just continuing the conversation of destiny. So I think Vellum will just kind of be mulling that over in their brain without necessarily bringing it up.
Voicing anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as silence carries on, Gray gets bored. And
oh, yes. Uncle, what was there something that you wanted to show me?
Yes. Hold on. Let the DM pull out their notes real quick. After dinner. So yeah, you guys finished eating. But actually, while you're eating, did you mention that you're going to Clovenheart specifically?
I don't think so. I don't know that Vellum would have necessarily thought to hide it, but I don't know that it came up. I mean, they said they were going on a field mission. But
okay,
yeah.
Just wondering. So yeah, after dinner, Gray will take you into another room that you are familiar with. It's Gray's workshop. It's a big old garage with a lot of like abstract paintings, like all over the wall, floors, ceiling. It's a very colorful room. Yeah, there's benches all over the place with various tools, lots of objects covered with tarps so that you're not quite sure what they are, various shapes, varying sizes. One of them is huge, and they take you over to a long bench with lots of like liquids all over and like stains, and like clearly a lot of work has been going on here recently. And Gray unveils an object on it. It is, so it looks kind of like, I mean, it is a radio, but it has two antennas, one on each end of it, several dials, some buttons, a large crank on the side. It's about the size and weight of an amplifier for like a guitar. Maybe not the size of one. No, probably not that big. I don't know. It's probably like a good, it's heavy, but it's not like, you know, you need to be a strong person to carry it around. And yeah, they say this is the TM radio, or the Thaumaturgic Modification Radio.
So this is what you've been up to lately.
That's correct. Now, this is going to require some explanation. Ever since the untethering, as you well know, we've lost the ability to do magic. But magic didn't just stop existing, right? I mean, the reason suits exists, right, is that magic still happens, sometimes completely erratically, in ways it never did before. It just seems to explode, and weird things happen. Suddenly your house is, you know, in a different city. You know, suddenly it starts raining acid or frogs.
Or acid frogs.
Or acid frogs.
It was a bad summer.
Uncle Harrington shudders. They say, so there's still something in the world that, like, maybe some kind of particle we can't see, right, or interact with anymore, that allows magic to happen, because magical objects have retained their enchantments from the time that magic still existed. So just because our link to Thaumaterra is gone, and we no longer have her blessing to interface with magic or whatever, it still exists. And I have found a way to use radio waves to recreate the effects of magic. Essentially, re-interface with it.
Oh, wow. Have you tested this out? What all can it do?
So not really, is the thing. When magic existed, it was a combination of incantations, you know, moving your hands in a certain pattern, drawing a glyph. The radio can sort of emulate some of that, and they press a button on the radio and a little screen pops out, and you realize that the knobs can be used as like an etch-a-sketch.
Excellent.
You can use this to draw arcane glyphs, for example, and then if you tune to the right frequency, it can create the effect of that spell. The effects have been numerous, if a little unstable. So?
Uncle.
Yes?
Are you giving me this to test it out in the field for you?
I'm giving this to you to test out in the field for us.
Excellent.
Think of...
No, Velum is loving this.
Think of how beneficial this could be to... Okay, great. They think they have to pitch you on this, and they see, like, you start to smile, and they're like, okay, great, you're on board. Yeah. Okay.
Meanwhile, somewhere several miles away, Spar is suddenly very uncomfortable.
This thing consumes a lot of power, and it's solar-powered. You can't use it too frequently, but it can be used to great effect. However, I'm still studying this phenomenon. And I want you to do something else for me. You will be monetarily compensated, as well as on the forefront of the greatest discovery in the last 20 years. Maybe ever, but, like, you know, you get it, because magic. Right, anyway. Right. So, wherever you're going, I'm trying to show people this device and get permission to build radio towers that will sort of study magical events in the area and collect data. They'll be back to me so I can fine tune the TM radio.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I'll give you the schematics for the radio towers. That would be a huge boon for Gradio and for the world, I think.
It sounds like a great idea. And this is out of character. I can definitely see how there may be some people who are not fond of this idea at all. Conflict.
Like, I don't know, maybe if there was a community whose whole thing was privacy and lack of radio.
Just maybe. Know,
just spitballing.
Maybe.
Awesome. What is this thing called?
The device is called the TM radio, or Thaumaturgic Modification Radio.
Does it give me a bonus to anything, or is it like a move that I can do?
It's like a move that you can do. It allows you to use, I think I said once per session, but I might change it to twice per session. I think it's twice per session. You can use this device to basically do whatever magical bullshit you can think of, but I'm going to make you flip something for it. So that is that.
Got a new toy.
Yes. So yeah, Harrington, Uncle Harrington kind of just Maybe gives you some non-perishable food to take with you. So maybe something you liked as a kid. What was Velum's favorite snack as a child?
It's perishable, but I think like apple slices and peanut butter. There's something so simple but so good about that. Maybe there's like apple flavored chewing gum or hard candy or something that he could give to him.
A jar of apple butter.
By the way, I knew for sure it was going to be, like, a fruit or vegetable. He actually gives you several different apple-flavored goods. There's apple chips, there's apple gum, apple, like, hard candy, stuff like that.
Excellent.
And she says, yeah, I always keep these on hand in case you come by. But these, you know, take them on the road.
I appreciate them. I will.
Think of them as some good luck snacks, and I'm sure you'll crush it out there.
And I will certainly be taking notes on how this little radio is working out there. And he pats the little TM radio.
I truly cannot wait to find out.
It is always a pleasure to see you, Uncle.
Yeah, they give you a hug. We will fade cool. out there. Okay, before we get to Spar, I, Jordan, forgot a thing. So, in Space Kings, there is a random plot generation table. And while I have much of this plot, you know, in my head, I am going to draw from it, and I am going to let it guide me in some way. So you draw two cards. The first one is, like, kind of a subject, and the second one is, like, an action. And I'm not going to reveal what they are right now, but when we get to whatever it is that I fucking drew, you know, I will tell you what it is. It could be a thing that comes up very shortly. It could be a thing that comes up in the last fucking session of this campaign. I have no idea, because I don't even know what it is yet.
Jordan, before you draw, do you want to give the audience some examples of things that you could draw?
Sure, yeah. I could get a group of bandits have the face of a dead man. I could get an ancient evil has been screaming for 3 days. I could get a team of scientists have invented a new sandwich. Like, A fold in space-time has infected the party with a rare virus. Like, it can be whatever the fuck.
A fold in space-time has invented a new sandwich.
I gotta read my favorite one. The Pope has just appeared and science can't explain
Excellent.
It.
Yeah, so you draw one card for the subject of the sentence and then one card for the verb of the sentence.
Correct.
And there's, like, a table that corresponds.
Yes.
It tells you.
Okay. All right, let's see what that is. Okay, this is already going interesting places, and I only have the subject.
Is it the Pope?
Okay. No.
Are we going to space?
No.
Are we going to literal actual
No, but it's interesting.
It's gonna be good.
I'll have to figure this one out. It's gonna be something. All right. So, Mr. Felspar. Yeah, what do you do after you get this assignment?
I will wrap up whatever I was working on at work. I think Spar does actually, for all that he pretends to be, like, pretty carefree and joie de vivre and hungover, he is actually a good agent and does actually do mm-hmm, work. Mm-hmm. So he finishes filing the paperwork from the last mission he was working on and, like, rechecks in all the equipment and checks out the equipment that he'll need. And I think he's going to wait until the end of the workday and then he'll call his sister and see if she's free for
dinner. Oh, yeah, she definitely is.
Great. Then he will work out the details with her, whether he's going to bring food or they're going to order in or whatever. And we'll meet her presumably at her house.
You know what? She's working a long shift at City Hall tonight, so she wants you to maybe grab some takeout of some kind.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense. Like, having her cook for me would be an event.
What do you bring?
Good question. Spar will bring tacos.
Love
and flan.
It. Okay.
Yeah, it's a good, like, tasty comfort meal.
All right, sounds great. So your sister Sorrel lives in a pretty large, like, kind of industrial apartment building. And I mean, everything in Vasa Natura is, like, pretty. So I don't want to say it's, like, a shitty part of town, but it's definitely the lower income part of town. And as you and I kind of discussed, Essay, the way that these are set up is that there are differently sized apartments for differently sized creatures. And then there's, like, common space for entertaining guests and such and such. You enter the common room near your sister's apartment, and, yeah, she's there waiting for you. So it's a pretty pretty nicely decorated place. It's very floral, for sure. There's, like, a welcome mat outside that's a little flower, and it It says Blossom here.
Aww.
And yeah, the inside, there's like a bunch of shelves all around on which there's like little furniture, tiny, like almost looks like for like a miniature model, like couch and table, even a little bookshelf. And as well as, you know, more spar-sized things. You know, there's a nice little rocking chair for you to sit on. And you are greeted by the fluttering form of Thorl, a pixie, who is like 7 inches tall. And yeah, she says, "Oh my gosh, Spar, it's so good to see you. I mean, I knew you were coming, but like, it's always good to see my brother. And it's always good to see tacos. Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't see them. I smell them, but like they smell super good."
Yes. No, they, I can confirm they are here and you will be able to see them. He holds out his hand for her to like land on.
Yeah, she does that.
He does like an air kiss near her.
She says, "Okay, so I heard a rumor in Governor Thorne's office."
News travels fucking fast in this town.
Well, I think
he'll like set her down for at the table she usually eats at and start plating the spar-sized tacos, and also separately he'll sort of like leave the portion of sorrel-sized tacos to her so that he doesn't squish them as he
excellent them. And she says, "Well, I think that I maybe got the news before you got the news."
Might not even be the same news.
Well, is the news that you're going home?
So it is the same.
Yes.
What does the governor have to do with it?
You know, I don't really know, except that Jack was talking to Thorne about it yesterday. Hmm. Yeah. So I didn't find out yesterday. Otherwise, I would have told you before you told me. But yeah, I found out this morning. People were talking. That's some like kind of hush hush thing. I don't know why it's so hush hush. But then I heard Clovenheart, so I was interested in Clovenheart. And then I heard your name, and I was like, cool, brother's going to Clovenheart. I mean, I don't think we're going to think it's that cool, frankly, but I think it's kind of cool. And I would totally go with you if I could get leave, but they don't really give good vacation hours at the governor's office, / I spend my vacation hours as quickly as I can get them because girls gotta rest.
You know, that's fair. And frankly, there are better ways to spend your vacation than going home.
You know, that's true. But, you know, it'd be fun to go on an adventure with you. I guess they'll be working, though. Do you know what you're working on?
No, there isn't a lot here to go on. And of course, you know how normies are. They look at Clovenheart and they're like, "Oh, no radio towers. Oh, it's so mysterious. Mm-hmm. Can anyone truly know what's going on inside Clovenheart?" Ooh. So, you know, they don't know. They don't know anything.
Right, right. Well, you know, this could be a good opportunity to prove them wrong. I do worry about how you'll be received if you're... I mean, people are going to be appreciative of you no matter what, but... You know, you haven't really gone home ever, and now you're going as a Fed. That's going to be interesting.
It'll be fine. It's a job. I will go and do my job and say hi to the aunts, and nothing awkward will happen, and it will be very professional. It'll be a professional trip with no awkwardness. How are the tacos?
Tacos are good. No awkwardness. So
great. Wonderful.
Are you gonna
did they pack a tiny horchata for you? Because I asked them to pack a horchata, and I know that they sometimes
are you gonna talk to Anya? And,
I hadn't decided.
It's a small town. I mean,
it's not that small.
Okay.
Have you heard from her recently in the past couple of years or
probably more recently than you have, only because I work with the government and she's a lawyer who gets mad at the government a lot.
Yeah.
We haven't had a chat, no, but you know, she's been in City Hall and we talk a little bit, but you know,
she was mm-hmm. here?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, she had to for a case. So, yeah, we talked. We caught up. She's doing fine. You know, we didn't talk about icky stuff.
I mean, if she was in City Hall, it's already icky
right,
enough.
Exactly. Anyway, let's talk about more fun things, like your secret agent job.
Yes, which is a secret, by the way. This conversation
never happened. What conversation?
Oh, you're so good.
Good at what?
You really got to put in for a transfer. I mean, the agency can use you. You're being wasted over there.
I got you some things. I just had the courier put them over there because they're too big for me to pick up. And she points to in the corner of the room, and there's the two boxes.
Sparrow, go get them and bring them back to the. I'm picturing that like there's like a human sized table and then a pixie table on top.
That is
of that
exactly
table.
What I'm picturing too. I should have said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So he'll bring it back to the table that they're to where they are and start opening the boxes.
Okay. So one of your gifts is a first aid kit. That is very cutesy. It has a bunch of animal-themed band-aids. There's like a horse and a raccoon and like a little panda bear. Like, yeah. Uh-huh. It also has other things in it, like, you know, rubbing, like alcohol and gauze and stuff. But the band-aids in particular are very adorable. Very like kawaii is how I would describe the art style. So these automatically grant 2 successes to any healing checks, they have 5 uses. The other one, and Sorrel is like clapping as you open it. She's excited. It is a snazzy tie, and it gives you +1 to panache. Mm-hmm. It's like a tealish color, I guess. But otherwise has no pattern or anything. And she said, I just thought it looked so spiffy. I thought of you immediately. You're going to look so handsome in it. And then maybe if you do see Anya, I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, no, and she's blind.
Yeah, but like she'll know.
I mean, she'll
know. Anyway, I mean, it's soft to the touch too. Just saying. Anyway.
He will thank her very much for the gift.
And she says, anything for my favorite brother.
Your only brother.
Yeah, but if I had to choose.
Is there, do you want me to bring anything to the aunts or to anyone else in town? I guess we're staying with Jasper.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which, also not awkward, so that's... Great. I love that.
Yeah, I'm glad you planned this trip with 0% awkwardness. That's so good.
Love to go home to my hometown where I was.
You love it so much you've never done it before. For fear your heart would explode from joy.
No, not with this spiffy tie keeping it in place, you see.
You got it. You got it.
And he ties the tie on. He like takes off the tie he was wearing.
She directs you to a flower place to pick up a bouquet for the aunts tomorrow morning to give her and give you some cash.
He'll decline her cash.
Okay. And Sorrel says, well, write to me. I don't know how long you're going to be gone. Let me know how it is when you get back or write to me or both. And
of course.
Yeah, I'll make you something good when you return. Anything else on your mind? Anything you want to talk about? I've been doing a lot of the talking at you and probably making you uncomfortable. Because I do that when I talk too much.
No.
But, like, what is Spar feeling? Like, let's... Layers of irony stripped away. They're gone.
In character or out of character? Is that a Sorrel question or a question. Jordan question? It's a Sorrel question. He'll look down at his food for a minute. And I'm back at Sorrel. It's hard, you know? It's hard to go... back to a place that it was our parents before it was ours, and everybody knows them, right? Everybody knows their parents, and it's you know, there's a reason I left. You can't live with the ghosts of people who were gone. Also, they're sending me with a tech, and so you know, I'll have a fucking normie to babysit, and it'll keep my mind off things.
Yeah, it will. And maybe you could use the normie to make Anya jealous.
No, there will be no make Anya, and I haven't spoken in better part of a decade. It's been a long time, and she has nothing to be jealous of. She's incredibly successful, and I'm sure has many beautiful suitors who love her very much and buy her all of the beautiful turquoise ties she could want.
Well, I doubt any of those suitors have as good a taste as mine, and they would be the wrong shade of turquoise. And turquoise isn't even Anya's color.
What is Anya's color? Just, you know, out of curiosity.
She gives you a delighted smile.
It is my job to gather information.
Right, absolutely.
He's clearly yeah. joking. Like, this is not, he's not trying to actually cover for anything.
I think that yellows and greens look very pleasant on her, but like more of a, not a turquoise, you know, like a real green.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's basically a sunflower.
She is.
And Sorrel like flutters up to your face and gives you a little kiss on the nose and says,
"Yeah,
you know, it's gonna be all right, brother. I'm sure things are gonna be great. You're gonna solve a mystery, maybe catch a bad guy. Hopefully there are no bad guys, but if there's a bad guy, you're gonna catch him. And you know, it's great. It's gonna be good.
It's going to be good, and I will be back within a week. Jack said, you know, if whether it's solved or not, come back in a week just to touch base, since we can't call or anything.
Okay, well, good luck. Not that you need it. You make your own luck.
Lots of NPCs talking about luck and destiny tonight, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he'll like make small talk and like definitely mention Vellum a few times over the course of the conversation as the normie and the tech and that guy and you know got a case of what Captain Awkward would call mentionitis.
Okay, she is going to turn on the TV set, and you guys are going to watch a movie together. She's going to insist that you pick the kind of movie that we're watching. So what genre of film?
It's a musical.
Oh my god!
It's like a black and white Singing in the Rain
so,
style, like tap dancing.
Yes. All right.
And he invites her to sit on his shoulder.
All right. The musical actually stars an elven singer whose name is, they just go by the mononym Diamond. They were a like pre-invention of television and such. They were. It's just a regular musician, like a touring singer, like a pop star, if essentially. And with the advent of television, they've also been getting into movies and stuff. Sorrel is obsessed with them. You spend the remainder of the evening watching their movies while listening to Sorrel babble on about office drama. The specter of what's to come casts a shadow over your mind, but in her presence, it's not as bad as it could have been. Despite your fears, the evening is pleasant. Time on Three of Hearts. You guys are catching a train to the city of Cindershore, which is the closest city to Cloakenheart, which obviously you cannot take a train to because it's a secret city that you can only be invited to. They are currently holding at gunpoint a voluptuous human woman that you would both recognize as Governor Thorne.
I'm gonna guess that they are not train staff.
We're taking you hostage. You currently are hostages. We can all agree. Everyone's on board with that?
That is what you have established. Yes.
Yeah.
Look, someone we don't even know directly, paid us for a sample of Agent Vellum's blood. This was the tipping point, Joker, guys, let me just tell you.
We've
the
had, like, third one we pulled three in Jokers this scene? In this train car.
Their, like, clothes begins to, like, tear at the seams a little bit as she starts to grow. And you see into her mouth and see what can only be described as shark-like teeth. And you see her nostrils going at the scent of blood.